This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Mark Cuban.
How you do anything is how you do everything. If you don't pay attention to detail on the little things, you're not going to be in the habit of paying attention to detail for the big things.
Ken Griffey Jr.
Hey, he wears his hat backwards. Well, I wear my hat backwards because my dad had a fro and I wanted to wear his hat. And if I put his hat on at age 6 and, you know, he's got a 8.5 and I got like a low 5, it's not going to really stay on my head.
Jeannie Buss.
Thank you for having me. What a nice turnout. It's good to see you. Everybody.
John Smoltz.
Is if you don't have the imagination and the willingness to fail or not being afraid to fail, I don't think you can be truly great.
Candace Parker.
I have so much hope for this generation coming up that have grown up with women in sports, in leadership roles, on television, speaking about sports, speaking knowledgeably about sports.
Pau Gasol.
To me, all the work that I've done, all the humanitarian work that I've done has always given me great perspective, has allowed me to keep my feet on the ground, and has really put and reminded me what's truly important.
Damian Lillard.
That was for Seattle.
Just to name a few. Welcome to Sports Business Radio. Now, here's Brian Berger.
Well, thanks for joining us on this edition of Sports Business Radio. Hope you're doing well. Before we get into our show this week, I just want to say a few words about our friends on the island of Maui. I have been there many times, both as a kid and also many times with my daughter. It's like a second home to me. I'm heartbroken by what I've seen with the fires in Maui, specifically Lahaina. My heart goes out to all of the families that live there, people who lost loved ones, people who lost businesses. This is a historic town. The banyan tree in Lahaina is one of the oldest banyan trees in the United States. It looks like it may have survived. But, you know, Maui has a special place in my heart. So before we start our show this week, I just wanted to let our listeners know how much I care about Maui and the people there. I have tweeted out a number of different ways that you can support the people in Maui at SB Radio. So if you go through the feed, you know, you'll see there's celebrities, there's athletes, there's really good organizations on the ground there that are providing everything from food and water to, you know, full-blown relief efforts. It is an island, so it is harder to get the relief supplies to Maui. So, you know, contribute whatever you can and just keep the people of Maui in your mind. All right, on our show this week, Brendan Kaminsky. You may go, who's Brendan Kaminsky? But prior to launching his own agency called Be Known, he managed the in-house social media for ESPN SportsCenter, as well as various ESPN on-air talents such as Stephen A. Smith, Adrian Wojnarowski, Adam Schefter, and Jalen Rose. He works with many noteworthy people in the sports and entertainment industry. This is a conversation I've wanted to do for a while. It's a deep dive into social media and digital. Threads is new and on the scene. You know, we've heard TikTok may be banned in the United States. If you're a social media manager at a team or a league now, you are asked to manage many more platforms and program those with content than ever before. So I think you're going to find some real tangible takeaways in our conversation this week with Brendan Kaminsky, founder of the Be Known Agency, great background at ESPN. You're going to get some real nuggets out of this conversation that you can apply to your world and your job right away. I'm joined by executive producer Brian Griggs. Griggs, how are you?
I'm doing good. And yeah, Brendan is, I listened to the interview and it's just one of those where you just sponge, you just soak it all up. He's so many nuggets, so much knowledge about social media. And that world is constantly changing, as we know. You mentioned Threads. New platforms, new ways to handle platforms. Is this one being banned? Is this one being, you know? So I think, man, he just has just so many good nuggets and so much insight on social media. So I think you'll really love this interview.
Yeah. And obviously he's an expert in this field. So he watches this in a way and sees things and knows tricks that you and I don't know. And he's going to share some of those with our listeners this week. So again, I think you're going to find great value in this conversation with Brendan Kaminsky. All right, some headlines. Last week we did our underdog best ball mania draft. So we didn't really get into the world of sports business. So I want to circle back with one of the big headlines, and that is the demise of the Pac-12 as we know it. This 108-year-old conference is now the Pac-4, Griggs. And, you know, it may become the Pac-2. It's got Oregon State, Washington State, Stanford, and Cal remaining. All in one day, the conference lost Oregon, Washington, Arizona State, University of Arizona, and Utah. Oregon and Washington are headed to the Big Ten. ASU, U of A, and Utah are headed to the Big 12. So many reasons why this happened. We could do a whole show on this, and we may in the future. But first, the arrogance, right? You had arrogance of Larry Scott, the previous commissioner, arrogance of George Klykoff, the present commissioner. They all thought that, you know, the TV networks were going to shower them with media money and offers, and it didn't work out that way. And they couldn't sell this Apple streaming deal that had many contingencies attached to it to the presidents. And as soon as that deal was presented in that Friday meeting, the presidents were like, okay, this isn't what we're looking for. There's no guarantees attached to it. We're out. We're going to the Big Ten. I think it was very smart of Oregon and Washington to jump to the Big Ten, even for partial shares. They didn't get a full share, but they still got more money than they would have gotten had they remained in the Pac-12. And then ASU, U of A, and Utah made total sense for them to jump to the Big 12 and again get guaranteed money and more money than they would have gotten with the Pac-12. It's great for the brands of these schools to attach themselves to the Big 10 and the Big 12. And, you know, remember, Griggs, a few years ago, the press conference with the commissioners of the Pac-12, the Big 10, and the ACC, where they formed that informal alliance. And informal is the key word, because there were no contracts in place that said one conference couldn't poach schools from the other. And the Big 10 came in and poached USC and UCLA. Now they've poached Oregon and Washington. The Big 12, as I just said, poached ASU, U of A, and Utah. And they previously took Colorado. So, you know, look, if something's not in writing, you gotta really do handshake agreements and alliances mean anything anymore. Obviously, in this case, it didn't. You look at the schools like Oregon State and Washington State who are remaining in the Pac-12. What's going to happen? Might there be a merger with the Mountain West Conference? But a school like Oregon State just spent $162 million on renovations to Reser Stadium. What I've been telling people, I did an interview with the Business Journal, is it's like remodeling your home and you just got a promotion at work. You're a vice president and you think, hey, I got all this extra money to remodel my home. And then the remodel's done and you find out you just lost your job. And now you're like, wait a minute, I put all this on my credit card. How am I going to pay for this now? That's essentially what has happened with Oregon State. Yes, they get a chance to spread out the debt payment for the renovations over 35 years, but they thought the media money was coming and it's not. And they'll be lucky to get, you know, $5 to $10 million from a media deal now. It's like the game of musical chairs. The music has stopped and Oregon State and Washington State and for now Stanford and Cal, they don't have a chair. And they're going, wait a minute, where are we supposed to go? Where's our media money coming from? So this is going to have long-term effects. If you listen to this podcast, former Big Ten Commissioner Kevin Warren was on 2 years ago. Kirk Herbstreit, one of the voices of college football, was on a couple years ago. They all told us where this was headed. They all said super conferences are coming. Here they are. You've got the SEC and the Big Ten. I would put them in the top tier. You've got the Big 12 and the ACC. I would put them in the next tier. And then I really think conferences like the Pac-12, the Mountain West, others, it's essentially high school sports. You're never going to compete for a national championship. You're never going to drive the revenue that the SEC and the Big Ten or even the Big 12 and the ACC drive. And you're playing for the love of the sport. And you're playing in front of the hometown fans and alums. But you're never going to play. There's no pathway to the national championship in football for you. What's going to happen with the NCAA tournament is, if the Pac-12 is now the Pac-4, are they still giving out an automatic bid to that conference for the NCAA tournament? Like, there's so many layers of this. Like I said, we could do a whole show on breaking down all the layers. If you're a coach remaining in the Pac-12, are you on the phone with your agent going, hey, get me to the Big Ten, get me to the SEC, get me to the ACC, get me to a bigger conference. I'm on the Titanic and it's about to sink. If you're a recruit and you thought you were coming to play against USC and UCLA and Arizona and Oregon, aren't you going, I'm going to hit that transfer portal button and I'm going to go play somewhere else where I thought I was going to be able to enhance my name, image, and likeness. I was going to be playing in primetime games. I was going to play against the best of the best. My conference doesn't even have a media deal now if you're in the Pac-12. So from the coaches to the players to, so many other people, donors are affected. If you're a donor, are you super excited about donating to athletics at Oregon State or Washington State right now? Probably not, because where is that going to lead you? I mean, okay, gosh, I won the Pac-4. Like, you're not getting to the national championship. You're not able to play with the big boys, so to speak. How does this all shake out? I don't know. I've been saying for years on this show, Griggs, I still think football and basketball are the two revenue-generating sports. They need to be treated differently than baseball, volleyball, lacrosse, tennis, all of the other sports. With all the travel that's going to be involved now for the Big Ten and the Big 12, are we headed towards a day where the only sports that compete and travel all these miles are basketball, men's and women's, and football? And everything else isn't part of this deal where you're competing, you got to travel 3,000 miles to compete in tennis or volleyball or baseball. I just don't know how that's sustainable. People talk about the student athletes and their mental health. Seems like there's a lot of burnout there. I mean, I personally would be really excited if I had signed up to play football at Oregon or Washington, and I now found out, oh my gosh, during my 4 years, we're going to have games at Michigan or Ohio State or Penn State. Like, these are some iconic venues. I'd be super excited to be competing against the best of the best in historic venues. But you got to remember, there's also studies and there's travel and there's a lot of other things going on. So, Griggs, how do you think this is all going to shake out with the Pac-12?
Yeah, you covered so many good things there. Great points. And it's kind of like, I've been a West Coast since I was born, right? 44 years I've lived here. So it's almost like losing your best friend. Like, the Pac-12, Pac-10 has been my life for sports.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh my gosh, I just lost like 7 friends in one day. It's like, yeah, where do I even watch the show now? So it's like, it's just overwhelming. And we've talked about so many times on the show, college football not being about money. Clearly, I mean, it's all money driven, as we know. And we're seeing that more and more. But what a downfall and disaster because of egos and money. And it's sad to see it go the way it's going. I do feel bad for the Pac-4 remaining, because it's just like, where are they supposed to go? And like you mentioned, Oregon State spending all that money thinking they were going to have these TV deals. And now, they've got this huge debt to pay off and they don't even really have a conference left. So it's like, it's ever changing. This is going to be a huge story. Obviously, the next, 6 months to a year, I think things are going to continue to change. And, I think it's good for, like you mentioned, Oregon, USC, UCLA, Washington. what a great conference to be in. I mean, they're going to play some big time games. You get exposure. You get the 9 a.m. games, the big noon kickoff. You're going to be seen by the whole nation. I think that's huge for recruiting and for those schools. Competition steps up. You're going to be playing, you know, better teams and better schools. So that's going to be fun to see those teams compete. But yeah, man, what a crazy last couple of months here. It is just a changing world. I'm most curious about what the Pac-4 does. Where do they end up? Is it a Mountain West merger? And like you said too, like, how are they going to compete against these power conferences anymore? It's just like, I don't know. It's almost like you need two tiers, like an SEC, ACC, Big 12, Big 10 conference title. And then you need the Mountain West, some other kind of a conference title for the smaller conferences. I don't know how you do it, but fun to watch, and things are changing every day.
Yeah, when we look back 10 years from now on the evolution of college sports, you can attribute all the changes to one thing: TV.
Yeah.
ESPN and Fox. This is a TV show. If I'm putting a show on Apple TV, I want the best stars. I want Jennifer Aniston. I want Jason Sudeikis. Like, I want the biggest stars on my show. It's no different for ESPN and Fox. They want the digital and media footprints for these schools. Like, you go out and get USC and UCLA, I got the LA market. You go get Washington, I got the Seattle market. That's where this is all headed. I mean, TV has changed all of this. So the Big 12, you know, they brought some great footprints with the Phoenix market, the Tucson market, the Salt Lake City market, the Colorado market. That made them attractive. The one school that I'll shout out here, and Griggs, I don't do this often, you know this, it's your Ducks.
And
your Ducks, I can attribute this all the way back to the Joey Harrington billboard in the early 2000s in Times Square.
Yep.
When the Ducks promoted him for a Heisman, when they said, we need to become a national brand to be relevant. We need to have the fanciest uniforms. We need Phil Knight's money and influence. We need the state-of-the-art facilities. Last time I checked, the Oregon Ducks play in Eugene, Oregon. That's not a big media market. But what they've done is they've turned themselves into a national brand. And when it came time to invite the schools to the cool kids party, the Ducks got invited because they built a really attractive brand over the last 20 years. And you look at Oregon State and you look at Washington State, you could argue those are better universities academically than Oregon. But Oregon had the shiny new toys. Someone sitting in Florida or in New Jersey or, you know, on the other side of the country, they know the Oregon Ducks. Oh, yeah, that's the team with the flashy uniforms. That's the team that had Marcus Mariota. That's the team that scores all those points. That's the team that has Phil Knight, you know, in their camp because that's where he went to school. He's the, you know, head honcho for Nike. They did a lot of things to get to this point. And I think they did the exact right thing at accepting the invitation to the cool kids party, the Big Ten. If they hadn't, all of this work they had done in the last 20 years, I'm not going to say it had been for naught, but they'd be left on the Titanic with Oregon State and Washington State, otherwise known as the Pac-4. So it's a backhanded compliment to Oregon, your Ducks, Griggs, that they made their brand relevant. And this is a lesson to all schools out there, right? Like, you need to be making your brand relevant. If the goal now is to star in the TV program on ESPN or Fox and be in one of these mega super conferences, you've got to make yourself attractive enough to the conferences and to the TV networks to want you. And Oregon has done that. And again, they did it from Little Eugene. They didn't do it from Seattle. They didn't do it from Phoenix. They didn't do it from LA. They did it from Eugene. So, again, I hand out compliments to the University of Oregon like manhole covers are thrown, not very often. But I think I lived in Oregon now for 30 years, so I saw when they stunk and when their brand was nothing and no one gave a you-know-what about Oregon. to what it is now, they deserve some credit. And they did this over the long haul. And I think the smartest thing they've done since I've lived in Oregon was accept this invitation to the Big Ten. And people may go, oh, well, it was a no-brainer. They were going to be left on the Titanic if they didn't. Okay, I won't argue with you on that. But I think getting themselves to the point where they got asked to the cool kids party, that was the last, you know, 20 to 30 years.
Well, and you've seen it over the years too, when ESPN has a broadcast at Oregon, they love them. I mean, ESPN, right, just, they're all over it. Oh, it's beautiful. They're showing the locker room. They're doing the flyover of the universe. I mean, they make it shine because it is that brand. And, you know, we go to New York every year. You'll see Duck shirts in New York City. I mean, it's just like they have right. The brand all around the nation. Not as big as a Michigan or a Penn State or an Alabama maybe, but people know the Ducks because of that 20 years of building this brand. Like you said, back in the early 2000s with Joey Arrington, and it's really just been this process. And, you know, Phil Knight, of course, helps. Having Nike on board is huge. I mean, that obviously they have some major branding around that, but I agree with you. I think they've built this for so many years and it's paid off, and you can tell they're looking forward to even a bigger stage now. So it'll be fun to see.
All right. We will continue to monitor college sports and the realignments and the conference shuffles. And like I said, we could do a whole show on that, but I wanted to say a few things about it in this show since it happened when we were doing our draft last week. All right, more headlines. Griggs, it's no secret that Phil Mickelson gambles, but according to a new book that's out, this is gambling like we've never seen before. According to this book that's forthcoming, he gambled over $1 billion. He lost close to $100 million gambling over a three-decade period. He tried to bet on a Ryder Cup that he was competing in. And he made 43 bets on Major League Baseball in one day. This is prolific gambling. This is historic gambling. And some people may say, you know what? It's his money. He can do whatever he wants with it. But when you're gambling on things that you're competing in, like Ryder Cup, look, the dirty little secret is this. Everyone's in bed with gambling companies now, right? No one can say, oh, gambling this or that or the other like they did 5 or 10 years ago, because everyone has a partnership with gambling services. The key is going to be, how do you keep things pure and clean and make sure that things aren't happening like what we've already seen with, I believe it was Alabama's baseball team. And, you know, there's going to be people that are going to accept bribes in order to influence outcomes of sporting events, period. How do you cut those off at the past? How do you find out about them after the fact and ban the person? How do you keep it clean so that athletes and coaches aren't influencing the outcome of games based on bribes or being paid off? I think we've learned enough about Phil Mickelson in the last few years to see that he's not what he was packaged as, right? He's not the all-American guy. He's not the guy who just a few years ago was one of the oldest golfers to ever win a major at the PGA Championship. He's not the guy who's overcome health problems. Like, he's two different guys. He's one guy in the public persona. He's obviously a very different guy behind closed doors. I don't know Phil Mickelson. I've never met him. I'm not going to sit here and judge him. But I will say this. When you're gambling that amount of money, at the very least, you've got a problem.
Yeah.
And, you know, hopefully for his sake, he gets his under control. I found it interesting that, you know, there were some fans and even some other players on the tour who had a few comments or a few shots at Phil after this. It's just interesting, Griggs. It's sad. You know, obviously he still has a lot of money, but I think if you read between the lines, you can see why he's made some of the deals that he's made over the last few years, whether it's with the LIV Tour or sponsors. Maybe it was in an effort to get out of debt. I don't know. That's purely speculation on my part. But when you're gambling this amount of money, there's very few people on the planet who can gamble $1 billion and live to tell about it.
Yeah, it's monopoly money for him. But I think, as you said, up until a few years ago, Phil was kind of the Mickey Mouse. You know, everybody loved him. He was the perfect guy, and nobody was saying anything bad about him. And then all of a sudden, stuff starts coming out. A live tour, now this gambling. It's like, oh, maybe Phil's not Mickey Mouse anymore. But yeah, it's crazy. I just, that number, when I saw that story come out, I'm just like, a billion. That is just, it's crazy. And how do you even place 43 bets in one day on baseball? I don't even know how to do that. I'd be so confused on what I was putting my money in. It's just, yeah, I think he's obviously got an issue. And I think it makes sense. Like, maybe that's why he took that live tour deal, because that was how many ever millions and millions to help cover some of this gambling stuff. It could be, who knows? But yeah, crazy story. That is just insane money. And gambling can be scary. But I agree with you. If you're gambling on your own sport when you're playing in it, that's not cool.
Yeah. All right. James Harden, he's in the news again. He's on tour in China with Adidas. And, you know, usually when there's disputes with the team you play for, it's your agent, or, you know, you leak something to a reporter and they're the ones coming out saying, oh yeah, James Harden's unhappy. No, James Harden, when asked at his event in China for Adidas if he's going to play for the Philadelphia 76ers again, he said Daryl Morey is a liar. Daryl Morey is the head of basketball operations for the 76ers. He basically threw dynamite on the relationship. And this is after he opted into the last year of his deal and then demanded a trade. Philadelphia says that they found no trade partners that are sufficient for them to trade someone of Harden's caliber. Now we're going to have the showdown. Is James Harden going to report to camp? Is he going to be a problem there? Is he going to be professional? Again, he opted into this $35 million contract. Griggs, I wish someone would pay me $35 million for a year to play basketball. I would show up with bells on and be the happiest guy around. But, you know, you see this going on. Damian Lillard has handled this very differently. I think he's been very professional about it. You know, you don't see him coming out and you know, saying things about the Blazers like Harden said about the Sixers. I was not part of the negotiation, so maybe Daryl Morey did promise James Harden, hey, take a pay cut last year, like he did, and we'll take care of you on the back end, and then he didn't. But also, I'm sorry, performance means something.
Yeah.
And when you perform like Harden did in the playoffs and you disappear in a game 7 against Boston, I'm sorry, performance means something. And James Harden is not who he used to be, and he's never performed well in the playoffs over a sustained period of time. He may have a game or two where he does well. You've never gone, oh, wow, James Harden carried his team through that playoff series, even one series, much less the entire playoff run. So if I am running a team, I don't want James Harden on my team. A, he's going to be a cancer in the locker room. B, he doesn't show up in the biggest games. And C, I'm going to have to pay a lot of money for him and give up assets to get him. This isn't a free agency type of deal. He will be a free agent in a year. So if I'm a team, I'm not trading for him now. I'll wait for a year from now when he's on the market. And if you're James Harden, are you really going to walk away from $35 million this year? Maybe you are. He has a lot of money. But, you know, I don't know that that helps your situation at all. So once again, Griggs, a malcontent player. You know, James Harden, you know, wanted to be traded from the Rockets. He wanted to be traded from the Brooklyn Nets. Now he wants to be traded from the Philadelphia 76ers. Is this guy ever going to be happy anywhere? And, you know, is anyone going to pay him enough money? Is anyone going to give him the role he wants? Like, is anyone going to kiss his rear to the point where he's like, okay, I won't complain and I'll just play. And oh, by the way, I'll actually show up in the big games and I'll play well and justify my contract and all of the noise and, you know, the tornadoes around me that I create. So I don't know. I think James Harden is much more of a headache than what I would be willing to put up with these days, Griggs. But, you know, there always seems to be a team out there that will make the trade. I think it would be very funny if he wound up like with the Wizards or the Detroit Pistons or, you know, somewhere like that where, yeah, he wants to go to the Clippers. The Clippers are like, we're not giving up anything of value for James Harden. And again, he's going to be a free agent in a year. So why would we do that now? So it's a mess.
Yeah, it's like cue the crying baby sound effect. Like, he's never had that. Wah, I don't like here. I don't like playing here. And you said all the same stuff I was thinking too. It's just like, he's not consistent. He can't win in the playoffs. He disappears. He's a cancer in the locker room. He's not good to the media. I mean, he's just all around just kind of a jerk from what I can tell. I mean, everything I see from him is just like, why would I want him on my team, especially if I'm going to pay him $35, $40 million a season? It's so annoying, these players, you know, where they just bounce around, like ordering everything at the dinner table. I'm going to have steak now. I'm going to have shrimp now. I'm just going to bounce around and pick what I want. I'm going to play here now. And they expect everybody just to be like, yeah, we'll throw you all the money. Come on over and play. It's annoying. So I don't know where he's going to end up, but again, a flowing story, because he's an icon in the sport. I mean, everybody knows James Harden. So, and he's a big Adidas guy. So we'll see what happens with that too.
I'll tell you what to keep your eye on with this story. It's not James Harden. It's Joel Embiid. At what point does Joel Embiid, the reigning MVP, who, by the way, also didn't show up in the playoffs, and yes, he was hurt, but didn't show up in the playoffs. At what point does he say, you know what? There is so much noise around this Philadelphia 76ers organization. I am tired of the Ben Simmons noise, the James Harden noise. Like, what's the common denominator here? It's Daryl Morey. And I'm not blaming Daryl Morey, but if Joel Embiid goes to ownership of the Sixers and says, look, the only way I'm staying here is if you get rid of Daryl Morey and you bring in someone who's going to calm the waters here a little bit, I wouldn't be surprised if we get to that point. If it's Harden and Embiid or Daryl Morey, I think Daryl Morey is going to lose that battle. So watch Daryl Morey. Watch Joel Embiid. If Embiid comes out and demands a trade in the near future, I think you may see Daryl Morey out in Philadelphia. All right. The last headline, and something I wanted to comment on, I rarely watch Hall of Fame inductions for the NFL, the NBA, Major League Baseball, but I did watch the NBA Hall of Fame inductions, the Basketball Hall of Fame inductions this past Friday. You had Greg Popovich, Pau Gasol, who's been a guest on this show, one of my favorite basketball players off of the court, Dirk Nowitzki, Tony Parker, Dwayne Wade, just an amazing class. Becky Hammon, Jim Valvano, Gene Cady. It was a night of some of the most poignant induction speeches that I've ever seen. I was crying through most of them. Whether it was Pau Gasol paying homage to Kobe and wishing that he was there, or Greg Popovich and Becky Hammon sharing mutual respect for each other, and Becky Hammon thanking Pop for, you know, giving her chance to break into the NBA and be on that bench and be a part of that organization. Now she's with the Las Vegas Aces. Tony Parker showing such admiration for Pop as a coach. Dwayne Wade bringing his dad on stage at the end and saying, "Hey, Pops, we both made the Hall of Fame." I mean, it was such a great night. My friend Eric Spoelstra was there. It was neat to see him with Dwayne Wade. Just a neat night. And, you know, I'm someone who helps people with public speaking and speeches and storytelling. And I just thought each one of the speeches, Dirk was wonderful. And it all comes back to relationships. I don't want to get on my pulpit here, but to me, what I've learned in life is about relationships. I mean, Griggs, you and I have known each other a long time. Consider you a great friend.
Yeah.
In this industry, you meet coaches, you meet athletes, you meet executives, you meet training staff, photographers, whoever it may be, social media people. You build relationships with them. That was what I took away from the induction speeches is, you know, when these players who were icons and coaches, you know, were thanking the training staff and thanking, you know, the PR people and thanking, you know, people beyond just the players. It was really neat to see, but you could tell that was the theme with each of the inductions was the personal relationships that they've created and maintained, even in retirement. That was one of the big takeaways, but it was a special night. I would say if you haven't watched those speeches, you know, go to YouTube or go somewhere and find those. They were really poignant and well done.
Yeah, it was cool. I went back and watched a lot. I didn't watch it live, but I did go back and watch him. And I mean, we've had Powell on the show. He was so well-spoken, such a cool guy. The stuff he's involved in, and just like you said, the relationships, the love he has for people like Kobe and other people he's mentioned. But, you know, I grew up during that era of the Spurs with Popovich and Tony Parker. And those, that team was iconic. I mean, Pop has been there forever. I mean, talk about relationships. He knows the back doors of everything in that arena. I mean, he knows everywhere. Dirk Nowitzki only playing with Dallas his whole career. You don't see that anymore. Nobody stays right with the team. I mean, talk about the people he knows. I mean, I think
21 years.
Yeah, that's just not going to happen again. Nobody does that. So I think, yeah, some cool speeches, just some great relationships and some iconic players. So I think the class was really, really well chosen.
Well, it was cool because those players and Pop, like they've all gone up against each other in the biggest games, you know, NBA Finals, Western Conference Finals. Dwayne Wade said, this has been therapy for me and Dirk because they met up in the finals twice and, you know, they have a newfound respect for each other. They have a new friendship. They've gotten to know each other as men and fathers and husbands. And it was just really neat because those guys were as fierce as any competitors that you'll ever see. But, you know, at the end of the day, we're humans and we're people. And, you know, you could tell that the whole lead up to the induction was special to them and that they had this bond now, Pop and Gasol and Dirk and Tony Parker and Dwayne Wade, by going through this together. It was really neat. And then, you know, I loved when Dwayne Wade paid homage to AI, the real AI, not artificial intelligence, but Allen Iverson. And, you know, Allen Iverson was on stage as the person, you know, helping induct Dwayne Wade. And, you know, when he talked about how Allen Iverson broke the mold and dressed how he wanted to dress and like brought this coolness and swagger to the game and, you know, did so from coming from a broken home and, you know, somehow found his way to the NBA. Like, it was cool that Dwayne Wade, during his Hall of Fame induction speech, gave Allen Iverson his flowers. Yeah. That was really cool. I love when people, you know, pay respects to other people. That was another theme. Like, you know, Tony Parker talked about how much Pop meant to him and said he was like a second father. You know, Dirk talked about all the coaches that have coached him and his coach from Germany, who has been his shooting coach and taught him the, you know, one-legged fadeaway. Yep. And, you know, as he said, made me play piano and shoot at the same time, like, you've been through all these crazy drills. But, you know, at the end, his coach is like crying as Dirk is going into the Hall of Fame. So it was really neat. If you haven't had a chance to watch it, give it a watch. Like I said, I don't watch those things very often, but this is one because of the players that were going in. And because, you know, Pau Gasol was on with us, like, I just felt like it was going to be a worthwhile watch, and it really was.
Well, and, you know, none of us get to where we are without people. Like, we don't do it on our own. None of us. Nobody. No human can.
Right.
All of us have coaches, mentors, family members, best friends, whatever, that help us make the people we are. So I think that whole night encapsulated relationships and these people were made these guys because of other people and coaches they've been with and teachers. So, yeah, really cool. Just a very emotional, strong, heavy night, but it was really good.
Yeah. And one more thing. The 1976 women's Olympic team for basketball, they were inducted. That was really cool because, you know, they laid the groundwork for what is now the WNBA.
Yeah.
And they were pioneers in women's basketball. And to see them honored was wonderful. To see Jimmy Valvano honored, the late Jimmy Valvano, who, you know, he didn't have a lot of time on this earth, but while he was here, boy, did he shine brightly and leave a legacy and an impact. And his foundation has raised millions of dollars for cancer research. It was neat to see teams and people like that go in as well. All right. Brendan Kaminsky, the founder of the Be Known Agency. Like I said, he used to work at ESPN. He's worked closely with Stephen A. Smith, Adrian Wojnarowski, Adam Schefter, Jalen Rose, and others. This guy is an expert when it comes to social media and digital. I promise you, you're going to have many tangible takeaways after you listen to this conversation. You're going to enjoy it. Brendan Kaminsky coming up next. You're listening to Sports Business Radio. We'll be right back.
Talent, hard work, focus, and determination got you here. Now take the right steps to prepare for your future and ensure that you stay at the top of your game, your business, your craft. Morgan Stanley Sports and Entertainment is a division of Morgan Stanley Wealth Management, dedicated to serving the unique and sophisticated needs of elite and professional athletes, entertainers, executives, creators, and other top talent and professionals in the sports and entertainment industry. They deliver the education, strategies, and expertise you need to help advance your financial game plan at every stage of your career journey. They speak the language. They know your business. Morgan Stanley will work with you to achieve your goals. I've trusted Morgan Stanley with my personal wealth management for almost 20 years. Visit Morgan Stanley at morganstanley.com/GSE.
Now, back to Sports Business Radio with Brian Berger.
My guest is Brendan Kaminsky. He is a respected digital media executive with an extensive track record overseeing, managing, and developing content creation across various digital media platforms in the sports, entertainment, and startup industries. Be Known, launched in 2021. It's a full-service branding and digital media agency focused on optimizing a brand strategy and online presence. Prior to launching Be Known, Kaminsky managed the in-house social media for ESPN SportsCenter, as well as various ESPN on-air talent such as Stephen A. Smith, Adrian Wojnarowski, Adam Schefter, Jalen Rose, and others. Brendan, thanks so much for joining me on Sports Business Radio. How are you?
I'm doing well, Brian. Thanks for having me.
So many things I want to cover with you in the next half an hour or so. But let's start with you being an entrepreneur and starting this agency and going out on your own. We have a lot of entrepreneurs on Sports Business Radio. What was your thinking there of wanting to go out on your own?
Yeah, you know, I always had the itch, and it wasn't like all of a sudden I just woke up one day and was like, I need to do this. It was building up over time. And, you know, even, you know, like you said, before I was doing what I'm doing now, I was at ESPN. And even before I was at ESPN, I was independently consulting. I didn't have a business. I didn't know what I was doing. I was right out of school. But, you know, I think for me, it was always about how do I get back to doing this and doing what I love and being in a fair way. And mid-pandemic, frankly, it felt like the right time. I think the digital industry was buzzing. There was a lot more people coming to me inside of ESPN, outside of ESPN to ask for advice. And, you know, I kept staying up late at night, and eventually it felt right to me. So it was something that I had built up over time, and I felt it for me. And for some people, working at a bigger corporation and doing a 9-to-5 and doing those things makes sense. For me, it made sense to get that experience and then to use a lot of those things that I learned and people I've met and relationships I built to go out and do it for myself. And so I'm doing it. It's been about 2.5 years and still figuring it out.
I'm interested in knowing. So I know you went to University of North Carolina. You're a Tar Heel. We have a lot of college students that listen to this podcast as well. What classes or courses would you recommend that college students take if they want to pursue this track?
Yeah, it's a great question, because when I was in school, we didn't have any of these classes.
Right.
I'm sure you can take now, because I graduated in 2012, so it's been about 11 years. I would say that if you want to get in the digital space, if you want to get working on social media and content production, you need to be taking classes that teach you production skills. Now, for me, I could have taken classes in the journalism school. I wasn't a journalism major, so maybe I could have taken some video editing classes or, you know, more video production things. But nowadays, I know they have classes geared toward even social media. I just spoke to a class a few weeks ago, which was dedicated towards literally social media building and content creation. And so I would say that content production is one thing that's overlooked. Early in my career, I didn't have content production skills because I'm not a video editor. I'm not a graphics producer. I'm a strategist. I'm helping folks build their brands. And why don't I refer to the experts to do those things? But you realize the more things you have in your pocket, the more things that you can help with, the more valuable you are to the people around you. So even though present day, have a team around me that can help with a lot of those things. It's really important to diversify your skill set. The other thing I'd say though, Brian, is the skill sets that you can gain from outside of the classroom are equally, if not more important. For me, that's what I learned at North Carolina is when I was doing work for companies like EA Sports and CBS Sports, and I was just hustling as a campus representative. I got to meet people at those companies. I got to learn about new opportunities. I got to put it on my resume, and it actually opened up some doors for me. So I think that stuff is equally as important.
Networking is a big skill. Not everyone knows how to do it today. I see a lot of the young people, they're great at LOL and OMG on text. They don't know how to network in person as well. What's your suggestions, your recommendations on the most effective ways to network?
Yeah, so what everyone says is, it's not what you know, it's who you know, right? Everyone's heard that. What I like to say is it's not who you know, but who knows you. And what I mean by that is we meet nowadays, everyone's like, oh, my friend, I know this person and that person, and this is my friend, and this is a buddy of mine. Oftentimes, it's a very light relationship. It's a relationship with someone that you guys follow each other on Instagram, or you met one time, you shook his hand or her hand. It's important to make an impact with someone. Like if I'm really, you know, passionate about Brian Berger and I'm like, hey, I love your, you know, podcast. I love your radio show. It's one thing to just shake your hand and send one email. Another thing to send an email, follow up. Hey, Brian, I started my own radio show at Texas or North Carolina or wherever. And, you know, I'd love for you to listen to it and keep me updated on if you have any notes. And hey, we just reached our first milestone. I probably got 100 listeners. And like, I think it's important because then Brian would be like, oh, great. It's not just another kid that came up to me and spoke to me or sent me one email, but it's someone who's sending me ideas and showing hustle. So I think that's a really important skill is you can pass out your business card. You can exchange social media information. You can send one email, which by the way, sending an email or sending a message after you meet someone is a lot than what folks do. Like some folks don't even take that step. They just meet someone and maybe someday they'll email them.
Right.
But really making an effort to show them what you're about and the work you're doing is important. And one thing that I do all the time, people want to get into sports and entertainment and, you know, it's a very sexy industry and I'm blessed to be able to work in it and do what I'm passionate about. But all the time, people want to learn, how do I get into sports? What are the things you do when you work at ESPN or when you're working with personalities or athletes and all those things? And, you know, I'll have a conversation. I'm someone who always has the conversation. And a lot of times people don't follow up. They're like, I'm always like, how can I help? How can I be a resource? Have an answer to that. Or if you don't have an answer to that, make a mental note and come back to me because oftentimes people like me are willing to help. And I think people get intimidated by it, but I think being outspoken and showing people what you're about is really the best way to network.
Yeah. Great advice. All right. The social media landscape is growing by the day. Threads is the newest social media platform. I have friends who manage social media platforms for leagues, teams, media companies, and just corporations. And never has the social media manager been asked to come up with content for more platforms than we see right now. But what I've always been told is it's not one size fits all. There's different demos for each platform, and you can't just put the same content on TikTok as you would on Facebook for instance. You know, you've got different demographics there. When you're advising individuals or companies who say, you know what, I want to have a presence on social media, I don't really know where to get started, I don't know where I should be, what's kind of the checklist of what you go through with them as they're examining what they want their digital footprint to be?
Yeah, number one is priorities. Like, what are you trying to accomplish on social media? And are you selling a product? Are you coming out with a book? Do you have a TV show? Are you a basketball player? And if you're a basketball player, what are the things that you're passionate about that you want to get out there? Because I think the way to look at social media is, even if there's a lot of people out there, even today, you know, everyone knows the value of it. It's been valuable forever. Some people are resistant. They're like, I don't want to just make it all about me. I don't really into it. I always tell people, it's not about, you don't have to be into it, but just know how valuable it is as a resource and marketing platform. So just tell me what you're trying to accomplish, and I'll sell you the best platform for that. Let's say priority is one. Two is identifying, you know, less is more. Like for me, what I tell people is don't be wide, don't go wide and go very wide. Be like, I need to be on every platform. Once you tell me your priorities, then I can tell you, hey, these platforms align very well for what you're trying to accomplish. And so we're going to go deep in them. And so that gets into strategy. Because I think one of the biggest mistakes people make is they're like, all right, I need to be on every platform. I need to make sure that, you know, I'm doing, you know, Snapchat and TikTok and YouTube and Instagram and Twitter. And look, don't get me wrong. If you're willing to be active on all those things, great. It sounds great in theory, but it's also better to be really relevant on key platforms than it is to be like mediocre on five. So I think it's not being spread too thin. And I think it's really, when someone gets on social, it's making sure that they're ready to be active and engaged. So if I'm working with you, Brian, and you're like, hey, I want to step up my game. And you're like, Brendan, you know what? Just, I need you to run with it. Just do what you got to do and tell me how to be successful and give me notes and updates every week or 2 weeks. And I'll tell you, Brian, we're not going to be successful unless you're actually active, unless we're having regular conversation. You're willing to shoot content. You're willing to listen. You're willing to follow the trends. When Threads comes out, you're willing to try stuff out. Because I don't want it to be a one-way street. I want me and you to have regular conversations, or you and my team to have regular conversations. Because that people know Brian Berger, they know Sports Business Radio, and they have, you know, an understanding of what that is. If some, you know, kid from Miami just all of a sudden starts taking it over and doesn't really have, maybe has some direction but doesn't know your voice, then, you know, isn't you, can't film videos with you, although nowadays the deep fakes, who knows, anything's possible. But nowadays, I think that, it's important for you to be present. So a big part of the checklist is making sure that we can put up some sort of schedule to be like, hey, Brian, once a week for 30 minutes, we're going to shoot a video. We're going to do a Zoom, and you're going to give me things that you're passionate about that week at most. And we're going to turn that into content. So those are a few things that come to mind. I think that people get very overwhelmed and they're like, this is so daunting. Where do I even start? Biggest mistake you can do is just be like, wait until you have a full strategy. It's like, just start. Just take baby steps. Start with one platform. Start with two. Build off of that. And the other thing I'd say is, you mentioned the example of TikTok and Facebook, on how TikTok, what you post on TikTok is different from what you post on Facebook. The funny, which is true, I mean, is strategy for each platform is different. What's also true, though, is because of what TikTok has done and captured the minds of so many people and captured the attention more than any platform, it was the most downloaded app in 2022, for instance. Now everyone's trying to replicate that. So what's going to be most successful on Facebook, actually, there's a good chance that it's what you're putting on TikTok. So the beauty of, for people like me, is if you're looking at things, you're like, look, you take one TikTok video, you put that thing everywhere. Now there's, you know, nuances to every platform, and Instagram story is different than TikTok and all these different things. But if you know how to capture and make like a specific type of content that we can help you with, you can really take that thing everywhere.
Okay, so you've worked with celebrities and high-profile people, high-profile companies like ESPN. I've always wondered, are they doing their own social media? Is it a ghost poster? I mean, you know, we've all heard the stories of that musician or actor or even athlete who we follow, and you find out, oh, it's not really them. They've got a ghost poster. What's your theory with that? Has anyone come to you and said, I need you to ghost post? And then, you know, like you just said, if some kid from Miami is trying to replicate Brian Berger's voice, maybe it doesn't come across as authentic. And my audience starts going, wait a minute, that doesn't sound like Brian. And then maybe you lose an audience.
Yeah, the answer is similar to what I just said a few minutes ago, which is, those aren't the successful relationships. Those are the successful content productions and social media accounts. Now, if you're an A-list superstar, or not even an A-list superstar, if you're a big star and you have a million different jobs, yes, you probably have someone else who's helping you in some way, shape, or form. Does that mean that they're doing everything for you? Maybe. But in order for them to be successful, they need to really know your voice and they need to be around you a lot. So let's say you're an NFL or an NBA player and you're traveling all the time and you have someone who's with you all the time. Then, you know, it's kind of like, well, it kind of is still that person because maybe they could just lean over to you. What do you think about this? Or they can film you doing things behind the scenes. But from my experience, like I said a few minutes ago, is those aren't the sort of engagements that I and my team try to do. Is we want to make it so we are an added resource and we can help. But what's going to make successful is you actually being present and us taking your voice and making it seem like, you know, what you see on every platform and account is Brian Berger. And there's ways to do it, right? Like if you're on TV or if you're on your radio show and you're making comments, you can take a video of you talking and we can take that. We can put it on Twitter and we can take a quote that you said and put it out. And like, there are ways to do it to make it organic. So again, I'm not saying that everyone does their own account because anyone who has a brain knows that that isn't true. But I will say that the successful folks will still be present in some way, shape or form.
I'm really interested in your work with Adrian Wojnarowski and Adam Schefter. I mean, these two are posting news all the time, breaking news all the time, lots of volume of posts. I know that, you know, they're posting more than the average person, right? But still, like, what advice are you giving them so that they can be successful?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I mean, working with them, you know, was and has been an absolute pleasure. And you don't get to that level without being the top of your craft and like working, like you said, so hard every day. And so for me to get a front seat to that was really special. For them, like, they are so talented. My advice is like, you guys, I mean, you're rock stars. Like, let me just tell you how to amplify your voice in other ways because they've cracked the code. You know, like, they are the kings of Twitter, right? As an example, my biggest thing with someone like that is understand the importance of cross-platform. Understand the importance of, is Twitter going to be around forever? Is Facebook going to be around? Facebook will probably be around forever. I mean, it's the 3+ billion people on there. But in this day and age, you never know. So understanding Instagram and TikTok are really important platforms to lean into. And, you know, making folks like them be like multifaceted and not just being one dimensional. And so I think that's one of the big things when it comes to those examples that we worked on. And now we're seeing, right? Like with Twitter, there's been a lot of, in the last year, a lot of friction and a lot of and threads, right? Like 150 million people are on threads now. And, you know, and a lot of your thread followers automatically comes from your Instagram presence, right? So the bigger that their Instagram presence was 2-3 years ago, the better it helps them to be relevant on threads. And now they're going to be relevant whichever platform they go to. But I think it's the multi-platform approach. It's understanding that, you know, multimedia content, even if they're not making it, there's resources that they can tap into to easily get that up, right? Like when you're breaking news on Twitter, it's different than when you're breaking news on Instagram. And how do you get that up in a timely manner? And so I think it's really, look, for me, working with people who are like superstars and like have been so much more successful in their career than I have, like by 50 times. But knowing that I have a skill set or I have something that I can explain with confidence to them is pretty humbling experience because they're like, it's like, wow, this person's actually listening to what I have to say. Like, this is great. Like, they're a rock star, right? And those are two examples of them and two very big examples. But, you know, you get to that point, though, I think, because you listen to other people around you that have other skill sets and other, you know, experiences that you just don't have. Similarly, for me, as I've been building an agency, like I'm surrounding myself with people that have smarter competencies in areas I don't, so that we can sort of make up for each other.
Yeah, that seems to be universal with successful guests that I have on this show. They know what their tool belt has. And if it doesn't have something, they go to people who are experts in those other areas to kind of cover their blind spots. All right. I want to play a little game here with you. We're going to look into the crystal ball. And I want you to tell me the future of the social media platform and if it's going to be around for the long term. And then is there a platform that may emerge that doesn't exist right now? So let's start with Twitter. So Elon Musk has come in. He's purchased Twitter. There's been lots of talk about the direction of Twitter in the future. You know, they've changed verification. They've done a lot of different things. Is Twitter around 5 years from now?
Well, Twitter is now called X. So Twitter might not even be around
anymore. Well, audience probably still knows it as Twitter.
Yes. No, I know. Right. That's a whole other debate, how crazy that was. My opinion is, yes. You said in 5 years, is that your question?
Yep.
Yes, Twitter will be around. I think that Twitter has built, you know, like people have built millions and millions of followers, hundreds of thousands of followers on Twitter. And there's a lot of value. And now that value may be dwindling in some way, shape, or form. But Ryan Berger, Sports Business Radio, you know, B. Kaminsky, ESPN, all these different, like, there is followers. Now, Threads has been able to come in and say, hey, we'll just build off of your Instagram audience, which is great. But I think people are going to be skeptical to just walk away. I think it's a very trendy thing to say. I'm done with Twitter. You know, I'm not going to Twitter anymore. I'm unhappy with the way things are going. Okay, well, leave. Are people leaving? I don't know. Like, maybe they're spending less time on there. But in bulk, I don't think so. And I think there's still Threads has made a dent, and we'll probably talk in a little bit about Threads, but Twitter has the real-time nature and nobody has that yet. So in 5 years, we can kind of fly by. I think it will still be around. Maybe it won't be as fun and exciting for people, but I believe in Twitter still being in some way, shape, or form active.
Okay, so Threads, are they going to be around in 5 years?
I believe in Instagram. I believe in Facebook. I believe in Meta. So when people in the beginning of Threads, like right when it came out or right before it came out, because we worked on it a little bit before it came out, we had some access for clients. Threads, my answer was, I don't know how it's going to look. I don't know how it's going to feel, but I know they have the best resources, arguably in the world, for social media engineers and, you know, product managers and all these different things. So I do think it'll be around. Those that are saying, you know, oh, it went from 150 million followers, which is, there are 150 million people on it, which is what it's at now, and maybe a little more at this point, and have said like, oh, well, now those people are even active. Well, it's still a very large number. And this is a baby. This is an infant of an app. And so I do think that there will be an ecosystem. I think that in 5 years, like, Twitter still has something built up for a long time that Threads doesn't really have. So I think it's an interesting debate to say, if you had to be a betting man, what's going to be here in 5 years? Is it going to be Twitter or Threads? I don't know. I think that Twitter, there's a chance I would bet on Twitter in that case. Now, I do believe in what Threads is doing. I just know that it's not easy to get all these followers that you have on Twitter and all the noise that still exists on Twitter.
Yeah. Okay. So you said you believe in Meta. So I'm assuming that you believe that Facebook and Instagram are going to be around in 5 years, right?
I would hope so. Those aren't going away anytime soon. Facebook is just, people love to say they don't use Facebook, but you still use Facebook to log into things. I mean, Facebook makes it really easy. It's different websites, different portals to log in through your Facebook account. I mean, Facebook, and there's a whole discussion on the engagement on Facebook right now and how people aren't fully taking advantage of it, which I think is crucial and something we do with clients. But yes, they would be around in 5 years.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think Facebook is still the best place for community. So whether it's like a little league group or a school group or, you know, some sort of community, I still feel like it's a campfire where people can gather around and exchange ideas, exchange stories. You know, it might not be the best place for the elite athlete or for Adam Schefter or Adrian Wojnarowski to break news. Like, Twitter is probably better for that. But I still think Facebook has a value for building smaller communities.
It does. And I got to tell you that some of the biggest wins that we've gotten in the last year for some of our clients have been from Facebook. Facebook Reels is a monster right now. And so anyone who's debating whether or not to test Reels on there, if they are listening, should be trying it. I cannot stress that enough. And if you hit on Facebook, you can hit in a very big way.
Interesting. Okay, so TikTok. You know, again, I don't do what you do. I'm not in the weeds on social media every single day, but I hear the chatter about, is TikTok going to be banned in the United States? You just said it was the most downloaded app in 2022. 5 years from now, where's TikTok?
TikTok is still here. Let's say TikTok did get banned from the United States. Like, I don't think that's going to happen. If it did, maybe a new ownership, maybe it would switch and there'd be a different parent company. Like, maybe it would be like, you know, we just need to, you can make it work in the US, and maybe that would happen. If it did get banned in the United States, that means it's still active in other places. I mean, it's still a global app, and there are millions of people across the world that use it. I think TikTok is here to stay. And what TikTok has that what they've been able to crack the code of more than any other platform is an algorithm that's wild. And it's kind of dangerous because it's ultra addictive. And I know there's parents out there. I have a client who told me, yeah, my kid can't go on TikTok right now. It's just, he gets lost. She gets lost on there. But that algorithm and what they've been able to build, force in the industry, whether it's YouTube or Shorts, Facebook Reels, Instagram Reels, like, everyone is taking that vertical video that TikTok has done and been so good at and bringing it to their platform, which tells you that consumer behavior is loving that, and which tells you that it's only going to continue. Maybe TikTok evolves, but TikTok is going to be here to stay.
You're listening to Sports Business Radio. We'll be right back after this.
5G is here. Is your stadium ready? From an immersive fan experience to efficient game day operations, 5G is transforming sports and entertainment. If you're ready to jumpstart your 5G transformation, look no further than Boingo Wireless. Boingo is one of the largest operators of indoor wireless networks in the U.S. They provide stadiums and arenas with state-of-the-art 5G networks and support teams across the NFL, NBA, Major League Baseball, Major League Soccer, and NCAA. I'm constantly interacting with sports executives, and the reason they love working with Boingo is because Boingo manages 5G and Wi-Fi networks end-to-end, offloading very stretched IT teams. Whether your stadium is looking to support mobile ticketing, cashless payment, or connected operations, Boingo has you covered. But don't just take it from me. Their customers include world-class venues like Soldier Field, State Farm Arena, Petco Park, and University of Louisville. Boingo and 5G, now that's what I call a win-win. For a limited time, Boingo has a special offer for Sports Business Radio listeners. They are offering a free 5G assessment for your stadium or arena. To get started, simply email sbradio@boingo.com and mention this podcast. That's sbradio@boingo.com. Our thanks to Boingo for their continued support of Sports Business Radio.
Now, back to Sports Business Radio with Brian Berger.
Snapchat. I don't understand it. I don't have a Snapchat account. I know the young people use Snapchat a lot. 5 years from now, is Snapchat still here?
Yeah. Snapchat is really big amongst the younger demo. If you talk to younger kids, they'll tell you that they use Snap for their group chat. They use Snapchat to text. People will just text on Snapchat over doing it via iMessage or their Android. So it is something that, and Snapchat is also like, they have built out shows on their platform that people watch. There's Discover channels on there. There's big media platforms that have shows on there. I think that Snapchat a few years ago, people said, Snapchat are kind of dying. Instagram stories kind of put a dent in it, which it did. Snapchat figured out a way to continue to fight and to continue to create innovative products. And they're very good with their AR, very good with their lenses. I think Snapchat has, from an innovation standpoint, you know, it is up there with anybody. And I think their innovation will make them continue to evolve and continue to make them relevant in some way, shape, or form. Their product team seems to be phenomenal. And so, yeah, again, I think it's just about evolution. I think that maybe the way Snapchat is present day is different than the way Snapchat will be in 5 years. But if you have the younger demo, and the younger demo was really all about Snapchat, TikTok, and YouTube, you will be here in 5 years.
So you just mentioned YouTube. That was one of the other platforms I was going to ask you about. Obviously, they're going to be around in 5 years. But, you know, what I'm noticing, and again, this is from an old guy who's still trying to remain young and follow the trend. There's a lot of young people, teens, like I have an 18 and a half year old daughter. They're watching games or highlights, like, you know, they just want to see a 30 second clip of, you know, tonight's game. They don't want to watch the whole game. They don't even want to watch 2 minutes of a summary of the game. They just want to know, like, who won and lost, what was the big play. And I see YouTube as a place where, like, you know, they can find that information.
YouTube is just television to me. I mean, YouTube is modern day. As time goes on, I mean, yeah, there's YouTube TV, and, you know, I have YouTube TV. I love it. I'm really pumped that Google got the NFL Sunday Ticket, and so now I'm just going to be able to use it on my phone. It makes it a lot more accessible. But, like, YouTube is just, like, there is some social interaction. There's YouTube comments. But the way I see it is, like, Instagram to me is, like, my social platform. It's the one I communicate the most with friends and professional relationship on a consistent manner. TikTok is, you know, social platform for the younger, but Instagram DMs is a big thing. YouTube is just, like, it's a social platform, but it's just like a TV. Like, I go to YouTube, I'll be on my couch and I'll just get lost. Like last night, I just watched a show for an hour, a podcast. A lot of the content that I'm consuming, if you looked at my YouTube algorithm, it's serving me podcasts, which really are just shows. It's just like new age shows that are on demand. And like you said, people just want to watch the Steph Curry buzzer beater. They don't want to watch the whole Warriors game. So yeah, I mean, YouTube is, you know, probably out of all of them, the one that's here to stay the longest. I don't think it necessarily means 5 years any of these are going to go. But I think that, just like you said, you know, YouTube is a very reliable platform to gain consumption.
Is there a platform that doesn't exist now? Kind of like Threads, you know, 6 months ago, we would be like, well, what's Threads? You know, and now it's here. Is there something that you've heard that's coming? You don't have to have a name, but like, this is a concept that could be coming to social media that doesn't exist right now.
I don't think so. I mean, something will change, Brian, and something eventually there will be a dent and someone will come in and create something. But my short answer is I don't think so right now. You have Be Real, which over the past year plus, 2 years, people like it. Be Real is like become a cultural thing. But will it last? I don't know. Will Instagram just decide, hey, they already did add it to their Instagram story feature. You can make a Be Real. Do people do it as much? I don't really know. TikTok as well. I believe there's a way you can use the Be Real feature. I just think that you really are going to have to make something that that you can't replicate on one of these other platforms. That's really hard to do because Instagram will just scoop it up, or TikTok or Snapchat or like. So as of now, I don't think that there is something that there is A, a platform, or B, some sort of concept that I can think of. I think that right now, these platforms that we just mentioned are the ones that are here to stay. I think Threads is sort of like, how's this going to work? But I know that Meta is putting their full resources behind it, and to have 150 million downloads. And I mean, think about how powerful you have to be to get 150 million people to download a phone, to download an app, to get on their phone in just 5 days, 150 million people. So I believe in Meta and what they're going to do and they're going to figure out with regards to Threads and just generally, but it's going to be hard for anyone to break in. I'd say it's just going to be, what's going to expand is just new features on apps, right? YouTube's going to launch something new. Instagram is going to launch something else where it allows you to, you know, live video chat with 10 people. And there's just going to be iterations amongst current apps.
Interesting. All right. I have a PR background. I used to work for the Portland Trailblazers in their PR department. I am the founder of the Sports PR Summit, which takes place in New York and brings people from across the sports world together, PR people. So I have a few PR-related social media questions.
Yeah.
I tell people all the time, and we saw this with Kyrie Irving and Zion Williamson and Ja Morant, like your likes, your reposts, these mean something. Also, you know, if you're out like Ja Morant and your buddies are live streaming something, it means something. When you're working with your high profile clients, how do you kind of coach them up on literally everything you're doing on social media can say something about you in one way, shape, or form? It doesn't just have to be what you're posting directly.
Yeah. Well, number one, it's why it's important to have someone else that can help you with it, right?
Yep.
Can monitor these things for you.
Yep.
And so that's always preferred. Number two is just to understand that privacy doesn't exist. Like what I like, I mean, privacy doesn't exist anymore. You can believe it does, but even like when people make their Instagram pages private, I say to myself, why? I mean, does it, you know, it, like to me, it's just that you have to have a better understanding of the privacy versus public thing. And like you said, I don't think there's like a secret sauce, and I don't think there's like a trick that you can, you know, pass along to one of these clients. But I think it's just to really understand that every little thing is public, and to really, you know, have a team around you. Like that's what I think the biggest advice that I'd probably give is, even if you don't have a social media person, you know, or you're not ready for it, I think folks around you that, you know, are understanding the implications and are understanding when to live stream, when not to live stream is really important. And sometimes you can't have that. You can't have that sort of influence. Like clients have their friends and family and they will have that. And you never want to get in the way of that. But I think it just goes to show how all the little things matter and how it's important to have someone monitoring, you know, your account. And sometimes what I'll say is, and what I've had conversations with clients before where they're like, look, if you see something that that I put out there or that I liked on Twitter and you don't think it's kosher, you don't think that it was the right thing, you have the green light to just take it down. You have the green light to just unlike that or unretweet it. And so I like to build trust. We like to build trust where people know that if we're involved in content and we're working with you, it's in the best interest of you. So ideally, we would get to a place with a client, like I just mentioned, where we're like, hey, we'll ask them, can we get the green light? Like if we think something about, we want to call you out. We want to make sure to be able to get ahead of that. And the other thing is sometimes deleting things or acknowledging them after the fact only makes things worse when it comes to PR and Twitter. You know, like I'm just going to, you know, X brand, you know, like I'm just going to make up Chipotle and I don't have any, like I'm just making this up. They've never done anything poor on Twitter that I've seen, but let's say Chipotle all of a sudden tweeted, we regret the previous tweet that we made. We will be better next time and promise to not make that same mistake. 95% of the people have no idea what Chipotle is talking about.
I,
And all you did, Chipotle, and sorry if anyone from Chipotle is listening and, you know, nothing against them, but all you're doing is bringing more attention. So a big rule of thumb for us, we're not doing something grammatically incorrect. If they're not doing something that's factually incorrect or with really, really poor taste, like most people aren't seeing this thing, and you need to just be able to have thick skin and move on and not necessarily bring more attention to it.
But if there is backlash, let's say, you know, a team, a league, a person puts something out and there's a big backlash and a lot of people are seeing it. Let's say it's trending. Do you address it or do you still say nothing and not shine that spotlight on it, hoping that there are still some people that didn't see it, even though it's gone viral?
Yeah, I think it's always case by case. But I will say that you don't want to just ignore it. Like if everyone in the world is talking about something, if a lot of folks are, I think it's a good practice to, again, it's always case by case, but I think it could be a good practice to take a video and explain, hey, something came up and I, you know, made a mistake. I take full responsibility. I understand what people are frustrated about it. I will be better next time and I'll move on. I think it's a good practice to do that. I think it's a good practice to, it doesn't have to be a video. It can be just text. It's always case by case, but generally speaking, I am a fan of being human and being relatable on social. The most successful people don't act perfect and they don't act flawless on social. So you make a mistake, just acknowledge it. Everyone's human. And I think just being relatable is like a big bucket of like, it's a big bucket of content strategy for me when it comes to people. It's like, I want you, if you're a high profile person, and I'm not everyone that we work with is just like anyone, like it doesn't have to be that, but let's say you are this larger than life person, you're this big brand, you need to show that you're another person. You're not just a basketball player. You have a hobby. You love to talk to people. So I think it comes back to a larger theme of relatability. And if you own up to it, like the news cycle moves so quickly, as we both know.
All right. Again, this is from the PR lens. This drives me crazy. So I get dozens of emails a day with guest pitches to come on this podcast or just product announcements, you know, deals that were made, things of that nature. I will then go to the social of the company or the individual or the media outlet. And I got to say, 8 times out of 10, there's nothing on their website or on their social that alludes to the announcement that I just got an email on. And it drives me nuts because it's like, as a reporter, you want more information. You want assets. Maybe I want some images. I want some video. But at the very least, I want a link to the press release, right? It drives me nuts that there are people out there that make announcements every single day and then they don't storytell on their own platforms. Like, it makes no sense to me. And like I said, it drives me nuts. Do you see this? And do you agree that people, individuals or companies should be sharing their news on their own social platforms?
That's the easiest question I think that I've answered during this whole podcast. It's right? A very simple yes. If there is news, if there are announcements to make, that is arguably some of the best content. You see it all the time where someone on LinkedIn is saying, you know, after 5 years at this company, I'm moving to this one, or you know, I just announced this for my company. Like some of those are actually some of the best content opportunities. Cause like, I remember when Facebook used to have out in their algorithm, like if it says congratulations in the caption, it would like do better because, or if there became a lot of comments that said congrats, then Facebook registered it as, oh, well, we want to serve this to more people because this is obviously a big moment. So I remember when that was a thing. Am I seeing that? I can't say that that's something that I often am looking, and I don't have a podcast or show, and I don't have, you know, like I live in my, you know, bubble of like following my clients and looking at my news information. And certainly I do market research all the time. So I don't think I can really speak on that. I will say, though, more often than not, I think people do not properly realize the power of their own social, like their, like certainly they have a business. Now, the business guy, you should do it. And if you're not doing it, it's an issue. But like me, Brennan Kaminsky, you, Brian Berger, like if we make announcements for our companies, or if our company make an announcement, or we have business things, like we should be letting the people closest to us know about them. Nobody cares more about, you know, nobody follows you more than the people that follow you on Twitter or Instagram or LinkedIn. Like those are your biggest supporters and your biggest fans. So yes, it drives me crazy. And, you know, I like to, and I try to bring that to, you know, some folks at, you know, ESPN when I started, and now to personalities, right? If you have announcements, you know, more so announcements and less like tune in and promotional things, but like more so things that are actually happening or are coming, coming right now, then it is very important too. So yes, I feel your pain. If I went through 8 or 10 accounts and none of them even have that on their pages, because also that's a good way to show, you know, engagement to someone you're pitching that to, right? Like if you looked at someone's account, you know, Joe Schmo who's pitching, you know, Brian on his podcast, like, and you, oh, wow, Joe, he got 500 people like this on LinkedIn. Like you'd be like, that would probably be a good signal to you that maybe this is pretty interesting.
Yeah. Or even like if someone comes to me and they're like, hey, can you give this a little extra love with a retweet? And then I go to their account and they didn't tweet out the news. So I'm like, what am I supposed to be retweeting? Because you didn't even tweet out the news about your book or your new podcast or your big deal that you just made. Like, again, I don't want to get on this topic too much, but to everyone listening, if you don't share your own news, how do you expect me or anyone else to share it? Like you've got to share your own news on your own platforms. And if you don't, it's a big strike against you and it lessens your chance of someone with a bigger platform sharing it. Like I love, you know, I've had Tracy McGrady and Oscar De La Hoya on in the last few weeks. They come on, you know, we put out the link to the podcast. When they hit retweet, that's great because now we're getting exposed to Tracy McGrady's audience and Oscar De La Hoya's audience and people who may never have heard of Sports Business Radio go, you know, I'll listen to Oscar De La Hoya or Tracy McGrady. And then maybe we pick up some new followers on social and some new listeners. I'm piggybacking off of their bigger, much bigger audiences. But if I don't put anything out and I just expect that Tracy McGrady and Oscar De La Hoya fans are going to find that interview and that podcast, people probably aren't going to find it. And they have nothing to share with their audience because I didn't provide them with the link / path to our conversation. So it's really not that hard, but I'm shocked at how many people just don't share their own news on their own platform.
And this reminds me of a conversation I had with a high profile TV personality years ago. And, you know, that person does a show and didn't really want to share that that show on their social. And that person said, you got, you know, once I do the show, it's your job to get it out there. It's all these different jobs to put it out on social. I did the show, the content's out there, and now it's on you to get it out there. And what I said to that person is, look, I get that you did the show and there's other platforms that get it out, but you should look at yourself nowadays as you're not a TV personality, you're a content creator. And the more places that you can get your content out there, the better off it is. And nowadays, everyone's their own PR agent. And the folks that understand that and get that and lean into it over time are going to be the most successful versus someone who goes on TV and is like, okay, I don't need to put this up on my social pages because other outlets are going to have it. But to your point, the people, and to what I was saying, the biggest supporters of you that are going to want to see the video of you on your show will be following you on Twitter.
I think everyone needs to listen to what you just said. everyone is their own best PR agent, right? Not enough people do that. Surprisingly enough, sometimes even celebrities, right? Or media personalities. I think that's great advice. Let me ask you one more question. I know we're running out of time here. Websites. People come to me a lot and they're like, should I be doing a website or is my presence on social enough? And I don't know how to answer that question. I guess if you're a corporation and you're selling product and things like that, yeah, you need to have a website because you're retail and you need a place for people to come in and buy your product. But if you're not, and you're just, you know, an athlete or a media personality or a small company, how important is having a website?
If you're an athlete, if you're a personality, I really don't think the website drives much impact for you. Because I get this question too. Ask yourself, how many people go to LeBronJames.com? How many times have you gone to LeBronJames.com?
I don't think
ever. How many times ever, right? How many times have you gone to LeBronJames' Instagram or Twitter?
Probably many times. Yeah.
Many times. And if LeBron can't figure out the website thing, I don't know who's going to figure out the website thing. So now, if you're a small business, if you're selling product, like you mentioned, there are use cases for it. For my website, you know, I have an agency. I think it's good to explain what we do, who we work with. For me, the most impact probably comes from an email signature. When someone like sees in my bio, or my signature rather, it's a website. I'm going to see what he does. So it's less about like searching than it is to get the people within my network or the people that I'm talking to over email to see that. And so there is something to be said about having like a hub and having a homepage for all your stuff. And I've heard that argument like for NBA player where it's like, well, let's have a hub for all my things. And I get it. And there's no harm in having it necessarily. Like if you want one thing to have all your, you know, initiatives, and if you have a foundation coming up or a golf tournament, or you want a blog, like that's probably the place to do it. But I wouldn't spend too much time and energy. And I think the more that you're building your own following and your own network through your various social media platforms, the better. Now, there are use cases where, like, if I'm selling t-shirts, probably need to do that via website, right? There needs to be through some sort of integration. Now, you can do that on Instagram now with Instagram Shop, but I don't sit here preaching websites to people. I sit here preaching, let's build up your social so that we can get a brand to pay for it and monetize that.
The last question I'll ask you, and it's the platform we haven't really discussed, is LinkedIn. So I know a lot of people don't have websites if you're not selling product, and their LinkedIn is kind of like, if I meet you and I want to learn more about you and I want to see your resume, so to speak, and your credibility, I can go to your LinkedIn and I can find out a lot about you in a couple of minutes. Same thing that I could learn from a bio page on a website, so to speak. How important is LinkedIn for people who are college students and obviously people who are established professionals like yourself?
LinkedIn is crucial. I love LinkedIn. And what I say to people is enough folks don't understand the publishing opportunity that is on LinkedIn. And this was more apparent maybe years ago. People just used it more as like a, I'm going to invite Brian to connect. You know, we had this podcast conversation. Let's be LinkedIn friends now. Mm-hmm. Versus understanding that I can publish this podcast just like I can on Instagram or Twitter, I can publish on LinkedIn. Years ago, people maybe didn't understand how powerful it was. Present day, a lot more people are publishing. Still not enough. Still to this day, I'm probably not posting enough on LinkedIn. But what I can say is, because people go to LinkedIn with a specific goal, because people go to LinkedIn to get jobs, to network, to meet new people, to connect with the alumni from other companies, this is very obvious, it's a professional network. Everyone knows that. But there's more purpose there. And what I've found is all the time, I said to myself last year, I'm going to start making a running tally of all the time someone says, I love your LinkedIn content. You know, I saw what you're doing on LinkedIn. Like And I got to tell you, like, I'm not sitting here saying my LinkedIn content black great. Maybe I do some things that people look at as cool and it stands out, and I'm in the sports entertainment world and I'll acknowledge that. But I think it's just me being active and me celebrating, like you said, like you asked me a few minutes ago about news and announcement, and people just remember things. And so I can't stress LinkedIn enough. And the publishing aspect, the other aspect that's really valuable to it is like the way the algorithm works is like, if I post this interview, I don't know when you're publishing it. So let's say I post it tomorrow. 7 days from tomorrow, that thing still might be getting buzzed and likes and comments. And not every platform's like that. Like nowadays, something happens on Twitter, it gets, you know, like 24 hours, then it dies. Instagram, a couple of days. LinkedIn stuff really lasts. And so I am a big proponent of LinkedIn. I think it's a great way to network. Like, let's say someone happens this and is like, oh, I really like the conversation Brendan and Brian had together. Sending a message on LinkedIn and saying, hey, would love to learn more about you, you know, would be a really good practice. And it's probably better to do that than it is to do it on Instagram. It doesn't matter where you do it. If you just happen to take that step, kudos to you, as we talked about earlier during this call on networking. But I am a big fan of LinkedIn.
Yeah, I think it's great too. And, you know, like if I'm someone who's listening to our conversation today and I hear your thought leadership and expertise, I want to reach out to you for more conversation and more information to learn about how you could help my athlete or agency or company. And I think anytime you can dig deeper with someone like we have today, go beyond the, 180 characters or however many characters you get on a lot of these platforms, like you get to learn more about the person and their thought process and their expertise. And it is sometimes worth a deeper conversation. And I think that's what LinkedIn is good for.
And the reason I'd say, I mean, look, like I said, if you reach out on any platform, it's great. But the reason that I think doing it on LinkedIn versus Instagram or Twitter could be better is on those platforms, you might not have much information on there. LinkedIn, you can have a full resume. You can have links to things you've done, videos you've created. And I can also see connections that we have in common in a professional way. So the connection piece to it, the second connections can instantly make you close. And, you know, some of this is not rocket science. Some of it is not like breaking news here. But it's good for people to hear that LinkedIn is very, very powerful.
All right, last question. Give a plug for Be Known. Is it just you? Do you have a team? If people want to reach out to you and talk to you further about how they can work with you and how you can assist them, what's the best way for people to find you?
Yeah, so our website is beknownagency.com. It's BKNOWN. Our Instagram is Be Known Agency. Same thing, BKNOWN. It is absolutely not just me. I would not be here without the team around me who have been amazing and some of whom have been with me since the beginning. And we are always looking for, you know, new potential collaborations or projects, or, you know, if you're someone younger listening and are interested in getting into this space, we're actually hiring an intern or two for the fall, which it's already August 9th, at least when we're recording this. And so I'm not sure when this will come out, but always open to new ideas and suggestions and people that are interested in working in sports and entertainment. And yeah, we're all figuring it out together, and appreciate it.
Brendan Kaminsky, founder of the Be Known Agency. This was so enlightening. I love talking to smart people who are ahead of the trends and, you know, experts in topics like this. And I think you were a wealth of information. So thanks for joining me on Sports Business Radio. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me.
You're listening to Sports Business Radio. We'll be right back. Hi, Brian Berger here from Sports Business Radio. Underdog Fantasy is the official gaming partner of Sports Business Radio and the fastest growing fantasy app. Underdog has a variety of daily and season-long fantasy games that you can play. Best Ball Mania has $15 million in pool prize money, and first place wins $3 million. You can play as many entries as you want, and once you draft your team, you sit back and enjoy. No lineup changes needed, An Underdog pulls your best performers and gives you those points. You never have to worry about leaving the wrong player on the bench again. Griggs and I will have our teams drafted for the upcoming NFL season, and this is a great way to enjoy all the upside of fantasy football without having to worry about maintaining your lineup each week. For daily fantasy, I love playing Pick'em and Rivals. With Pick'em, if I get 5 picks right, I can win 20 times my money. It's a fun way to do over-unders on player stats, as well as pit players against each other. We've got a special offer for Sports Business Radio listeners. New users get up to $100 matched on their first deposit when they use the code SBR, like Sports Business Radio. SBR is the code to use. So download the app at underdogfantasy.com or in your app store, and then enter the promo code SBR to get up to $100 to play with. Also, make sure to listen to my conversation on Sports Business Radio with Underdog Fantasy founder and co-CEO Jeremy Levine. He shares the unique story of how he founded Underdog Fantasy, and he has great insight into the future of daily fantasy and sports betting. Thanks to Underdog Fantasy for being the official gaming partner of Sports Business Radio.
Well, that's it for this edition of Sports Business Radio. Thanks for tuning in. And thanks to the Sports Business Radio team, Brian Griggs, Josh Blank, Ryan Nakajima, and from our friends at CG Sports, CG Young, and Nicole Wardle. I'm Brian Berger. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you soon right here on Sports Business Radio.
This and every SBR podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and your favorite listening app. Follow Sports Business Radio on Facebook, Twitter at SB Radio, Instagram at Sports Business Radio, and online at sportsbusinessradio.com. Sports Business Radio is produced by Brian Griggs and Griggs Productions, griggsproductions.com.